This week marks International Overdose Awareness Day, and as part of it, the HSE is trying to raise awareness about how to respond to someone experiencing an overdose. I'm talking about an injection that can delay the symptoms long enough to get someone to hospital. Let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe wherever it is you're listening. And just to say thanks to all of you who do listen on a weekly basis, but also thanks to the judges over at the Imro Radio Awards who have nominated Let Me Explain for Radio Station Podcast of the Year for the third year running. Also, a big shout out to our former sound man, Lachlan Hart. He remains sound, just not necessarily ours. Three of the podcasts that he produced made the top five shortlist for News Talk, including this one's big props to Lachlan. Now, this week marks World Overdose Awareness Day, a day set up to remember those who have died, but also to acknowledge the grief of their families and to try to end drug overdosing. And the HSE is looking to raise awareness among families affected by opioid addiction of an injection which can delay an overdose long enough to get someone going through it to hospital to receive what would hopefully be life-saving treatment. The drug is called naloxone, not something I was familiar with and probably something most people aren't familiar with, but something now that there's a push to make sure is on hand for people who may have a friend or a family member or a service user if they're engaged with different agencies who is at risk of having an overdose. And here to tell me more about it is Jenny Smith, the naloxone project lead with the HSE National Social Inclusion Office. So Jenny, first up, what is naloxone?
So naloxone, it's a prescription medication and it's used to temporarily reverse the effects of an opioid overdose. So you're talking heroin, methadone and the nitazenes that you will have heard in the news. So if it's administered when somebody is having an overdose, it can temporarily reverse the effects while you're waiting for an ambulance to arrive.
Okay, and how does it do that?
So when you take an opioid, it sits on the receptor in the brain. If it's more of an opioid than the body can handle, the body is going to start to show signs of an opioid overdose. So if you administer naloxone, what it does is it actually kicks that opioid off the receptor temporarily, and it allows the message in the receptor in the brain to go through to the body so the body can become responsive, can start to breathe again. But it's only temporary, so it doesn't get rid of the opioid. It just moves it, so it's like a stronger magnet. It kicks that opioid out, but when it wears off, 20 to 90 minutes, that opioid is going to go back onto the receptor. So it's only a temporary reversal while you're waiting for an ambulance to arrive.
Okay, so is that how, just to maybe bring us into how overdoses work, is that what it does? It just overloads the brain and that the rest of the body can't function?
It blocks the signal from the brain to the body. So the brain isn't telling the body to breathe and to be responsive. So it blocks that. So the naloxone removes that and allows the message to go back through again.
Okay. And how long has naloxone been around? It's something I had never heard of until Grayson. I imagine a lot of people won't be very familiar with. So is this relatively new? Has it a long history?
So 2015, it would have been introduced in Ireland. So we're looking at 10 years next year. But I suppose if you're not in an environment where it's being used, you're not going to have heard of it.
And when you say it can kick that stuff off, so who are the people who should have this or should have access to it?
Yeah, so we would want anybody who's at risk of an opioid overdose to have it because it's a prescription medication. But if they experience an overdose, you can't administer it to yourself. So people need to have access to it to be able to administer. So friends, family members, support workers, people who are likely to witness an opioid overdose need to know where it is and how to use it.
And so bring me into having those conversations then, because, you know, is that something that the person who is maybe taking the drugs and think they might be at risk themselves says, hey, have this as a backup? Or is it the case that family and friends and those that are close to them need to be a bit proactive about it?
I suppose it goes both ways, to be honest. If you're somebody who uses drugs and you are at risk of an opioid overdose, you need to let somebody know that you have that available. And I can talk you through the overdose rescue plan that we've launched as part of International Overdose Awareness Day as well in a moment. But it's also about family members. If you have somebody in your family who uses drugs, having that conversation, can you ask your support service or your GP for naloxone? Tell me where it is so I know that I can administer it. And what we did on Saturday is we actually ran events in the community. So there were 6 events on Saturday. I was at the one in Talla, for example, and there was a gentleman there, his family member uses drugs. They have naloxone in the house, but he didn't know how to use it. So when you ring 999, the call holder will actually talk you through how to use it. But it's really beneficial to know how to use it already so that the 999 caller holder is reminding you as opposed to telling you for the first time.
And what is the way it's administered?
Yeah, so there's two different types. So we have the injectable and then we have the intranasal. So in terms of from family members and friends, what we're saying is the intranasal, it's really easy. You don't need to assemble it. It's literally an intranasal. So you pop it up the nose and press it and it sprays. And that's naloxone administered. It couldn't get any simpler. But we do have the injectable, which is pre-filled syringe, which has to be assembled with the needle. And so, for example, on Saturday, there was a gentleman whose child has that. So we were able to show them how to use that. But there's two different ways, but the intranasal would certainly be an easier option for people.
And you mentioned the recovery program you were talking about there. Maybe talk us through the steps of that, of what to do if someone is having an overdose.
Yeah, so it's really important that somebody knows what it's going to look like. So as I said, the opioid will be sat on the receptor. Slowly that message stops going through to the body. So the body is going to start to show signs of an opioid overdose. So the first one is it's going to become unresponsive. So when you're tapping or shaking or saying someone's name, there's no response from them. They may not be breathing. They may have shallow breathing, pinpoint pupils, pale or clammy skin. There may be a snoring or kind of like that end of life rattling noise. Their nails, if they're white, are going to go blue, as are their lips, and if they have black skin, they're going to go a greyish tinge. So if you're recognizing those signs, the first thing to do is to ring 999 and get medical help on their way to you. Okay. Now, if the person is breathing, you can pop them into the recovery position and administer naloxone. And if they're not breathing, you're going to give them one cycle of CPR, so 30 chest compressions and two rescue breaths if you're comfortable doing so. If not, just chest compressions. Administer your first dose of naloxone, and then there's a cycle. So you'll give three rounds of CPR, administer another dose of naloxone, three rounds of CPR, another dose, and you'll continue those cycles until the paramedics arrive with you.
Is it something that has been used much in Ireland? I mean, is it used much in here? What kind of volume are we talking about?
It is. So if we look at last year, so 2023, it was used 461 times within the community and support services. So it is a huge amount of times that it has been used. And if you look at how many lives could have been saved from that. Last year, we distributed over 6,500 units within the communities, within the community and support services. So 461 times it was used last year.
Is there a problem, I suppose, as well as it works, of making sure that it's there at the time it's needed, in that people, when they're taking these drugs, they're not, you know, they're not going to be in the living room with the family, they might even be with a friend or with anyone else. So I presume that's quite a difficult thing to get around.
It is. And that's what we've actually focused on this year as part of International Overdose Awareness Day. So we look at the lives that were lost in 2020. So 409 people lost their lives to an overdose that year. And that's, you know, it's a number, but there's a person behind each one of those numbers. There's a family, there's friends, there's support services. And 42% of the people in 2020 who lost their lives to an overdose died alone. So naloxone is amazing, but you need somebody there to be able to administer it. So we focused this year on launching an overdose rescue plan. So it's about having that conversation, whether it's with a family member, a friend, a peer, a support service. Are you using drugs? Are you using drugs alone? And if you are using them alone, how is somebody going to know that you've overdosed? Have you got naloxone available? And does somebody know where it is to be able to administer it to you? So it's a difficult conversation to have with somebody. But we worked really hard with Analytic Drug Project and with ISHCA, so the advocacy service for people who use drugs, to see how can we have those conversations with people who use drugs? How can we reduce the number of fatal overdoses that we have in this country?
Is it something that only the user can get on a prescription, or could a family member get it independently of them?
So it is a prescription medication, and we've worked really hard with the ICGP, so the Irish College of General Practitioners, in terms of that prescription of it. So we ask them to prescribe two or three units so that the member of the family can have one of those. They can also leave one where they miss, whether that's a hostel, a friend, or wherever they're sleeping, and then keep one for themselves. So if you think of an EpiPen, you wouldn't just have one EpiPen, would you? You'd have one at the school, you'd have one at home, you might have one that you keep on yourself. And naloxone should be no different to that.
Mm. I suppose if you, I want to give some advice maybe to people who are trying to have that conversation, would be a brother or a son or a, you know, a daughter or whoever it is, and they're very resistant or they're denying it and saying that they're not taking it, but they know that's not really the truth. Like, what is the best way to come at that without then pushing them further away and alienating them?
I think that's a really difficult one. And I'm going to be honest, I'm not skilled. That's not my area of expertise. What I would suggest in terms of from a family member is to contact a family support service. You know, that's something that they would have experience of having that conversation, and they would be best placed to support in terms of different methods of trying to have that conversation with a loved one.
Jenny, that's pretty much all I had to ask on your end. Is there anything we didn't get to or that's important to mention that we haven't touched on?
I think just the purpose of International Overdose Awareness Day, if you don't mind. So there's two things to that, really. Every year, it's a time to remember. So it's to remember, as I said, for 2020, 409 lives. Each one of those is a person. It's really easy to write a number and forget that behind that is a person. Behind that is their circle of support, everyone that's affected by that life that's lost. So International Overdose Awareness Day is a time to remember the person that's been lost, remember then all of the family and the grief that surrounds that loss, but also a time to act. So this year for us, in terms of from the HSC National Social Inclusion Office, it was about focusing on making members of the public, friends, family aware of how to recognise an opioid overdose, how to administer naloxone, and then looking at that launch of that overdose rescue plan. So having those difficult conversations so that we're not looking at 42% of people dying alone.
Jenny Smith, thanks a million for talking to us. Jenny Smith, Naloxone Project Lead with the HSE. I've also been speaking to Stephen O'Flaherty. He is the Community Engagement Officer with the National Ambulance Service, working in the HSE Southwest Regional Health Area. So he's dealt with this on the very front lines of people administering naloxone and being a first responder to incidents of overdose. He started by saying that on a practical, physical level, well, here's what the drug does.
So naloxone is a prescription medication used to temporarily reverse the effects of opioid drugs, for example, heroin, morphine, codeine, methadone, and nitazine. And so if someone experiences an overdose, naloxone can help that person. It reverses the effects of those drugs and can save a life, because the effects of those drugs they're depressant drugs, so they make you unconscious, they slow your breathing down and even stop it in some cases. And what naloxone can do is it reverses the effects of those drugs so that the person can start breathing again and become more conscious, which is, again, it potentially would save their life if given quickly enough.
So presumably where you come in is when people are having an overdose or have had one and someone near them is sort of ringing you. What kind of advice are you giving there? What are you saying to people to do in the interim?
In the ambulance service, we are our call takers who you will speak to on the line. They will go through a series of questions to find out what's happening. And then as part of that in the exchange, or part of that call, they've also got instructions. So they'll be able to tell you what to do to deal with the emergency. So for example, they'll instruct you on how to check if somebody's breathing, and then based on whether they're breathing or not, they'll give you instructions on what to do next, whether that might be start CPR, and they'll talk you through on how to start CPR. Or they will, if naloxone is available and it's an overdose, then they can go through and tell you how to use naloxone as well. And it's really good. The naloxone program has some really good peer naloxone support. So we anybody who's engaging with addiction services, we'd recommend that they, you know, if they're using opioid drugs, that they would get a prescription for naloxone, and they'd be given enough naloxone that they would have it themselves, and that they could give it to a family or friend or loved ones who potentially would have it and be trained to use it. Because the very nature of, I suppose, an overdose from an opioid is that they'll be unconscious, so they can't use naloxone themselves. So having peers, other users, or other family, friends, or people within the vicinity that know, that have it and are able to use it, is absolutely life saving. And that's, I suppose, one of the things that we're trying to get across from overdose, International Overdose Awareness Day, is that we have the training is available. So you can do an online course and then you come and do a face-to-face kind of training session on how to use Naloxone, and then you can get Naloxone as well as part of that package. So it's a really good kind of system that we have at the moment to try and get Naloxone more widely spread. And something that the HC Social Inclusion Office is really kind of trying to get more knowledge that is of that course and get it out there more.
Is it kind of like an EpiPen? Is that the maybe the best way to describe it to people who use this?
Yeah, so there's a number of different ways you can deliver Naloxone into the body. So the two ways that we train the public and peer users in is either through an IM injection, which again would be similar to an EpiPen, but there's a little bit more involved just because it's not as the EpiPen has put lots of money behind the marketing and the development of making it simple to use, whereas the Naloxone injection, there's a little bit of more training involved, but ultimately it's the same thing. You have a needle that you inject into a muscle to deliver the Naloxone. But also, what is really nice with Naloxone is it can be delivered intranasally. So for want of a better word, like a Sudafed spray or a decongestant spray that you can pop into your nose, and it creates a fine mist that delivers the drug up into your nasal cavity. And that works really quickly. It works almost as quickly as if you were to deliver the medicine into the intravenous system, into straight into the blood. And it's much simpler, and it's very easy to use. So that's the one we were training people on, we were showing people the nasal device on Saturday at the International Overdose Awareness Day, because that's probably the most likely one people are to use, because it's more user friendly, I suppose.
So talk to me about the community engagement side of things, because it's, you know, well and good saying that people should have this if they know someone who's using, but having that conversation with them, look, are you using to a level that might cause an overdose? That's not a very simple thing. So for anyone who's listening, with maybe in that family situation and they suspect, or they don't quite know, or they haven't had that conversation, how do they go about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose the first protocol would be to make sure that the person is tied into some sort of service, be that an addiction service, or if they're homeless, they tie into one of the homeless services. There's key workers within those services that are trained Naloxone facilitators. So they've done the training and they can, I suppose, give more information about Naloxone, deliver the training around Naloxone as well, which is really important. And arrange, most of those services will have a GP or a doctor attached to them that can arrange for the prescription of Naloxone to give to the user of opioids, and their family would be the ideal situation. The other thing would be to look up the literature online. So again, drugs.ie will have information around it, and the Social Inclusion Office also have lots of information around the Naloxone program and things like that. So again, they're tied into all the services. Really, the place where we point people towards are probably the different services that people can avail of, be it addiction services or the homeless services.
You're obviously going to be, if there's someone you know, like, you're going to be concerned about them, particularly if it's someone who's close, but you obviously also can't keep an eye on them 24/7. They're probably not going to be doing the drugs in front of you. Is there a best way to go about trying to help them, to monitor them without driving yourself and them demented?
It's a very difficult situation, to be perfectly honest. Again, it will depend entirely on the person that you're talking about. The best people to deal with all this stuff really are the people who are doing it every day. So, you know, our addiction services and our homeless services that are probably already interacting with these people. I know we've outreach workers in Cork here that go around and they're meeting people who are using opioids on the street every day, and they're interacting with them, and they use those opportunities to, I suppose, educate and, you know, I suppose, try and make it as safe as possible. And that's the thing. It's about trying to, you know, yes, there's lots of education and there's lots of steps to try and, I suppose, help people with addiction, to get them to stop using. But then there has to be safety around people when they are using as well. And it's about a, you know, a holistic approach to this kind of opioid overdose problem that, you know, you can't just tackle it one way. You have to be able to look at it in as a holistic approach to about the person-centered approach. And the addiction service are really good at that. They're really good at, you know, dealing with the person at the center of the addiction, as opposed to the addiction itself.
Have you seen an increase in overdoses over the last few years?
Look, as like I'm a responder myself, first responder to the ambulance service, you know, frontline paramedic for 10 years. And it's a problem that the ambulance service deals with regularly. As to whether it's increasing or not, it's really hard to tell, because again, it's only from my own personal experience that you would see kind of regular spikes in calls that we would get in the ambulance service. But it's hard to say at a grand scale that, you know, that there's an increase or a decrease. But certainly you would notice as you respond to calls that certain times you get a spike of calls, and you might be busy for a period of time, and then it'll quiet down again, and you know, kind of comes in these spikes is probably the best way to.
And are they around any particular time of year or event a year, or is it just random?
I'm to be honest, I don't know the exact reasons for it. You know, there's potential that, because obviously street opioids would be are uncontrolled. So again, the strength of them changes depending on the batch that's out. So sometimes there can be spikes that follow, and you'd see safety notices that are released from the HC on certain occasions when we see a trend happening. And, you know, from the public health point of view, we want to get that message out there that there is a particularly strong potential opioid going around, and especially with the synthetic opioids that are particularly common now, they're not always the same strength, and sometimes they're much stronger, and unfortunately people find out by taking them.
Is there a particular message you want to get out to people then for International Overdose Day? Because I feel like it's something a lot of people probably don't think about, but a lot of people would have a stigma about as well when they think of it. So is there something for someone who works with this on the front line that maybe people who aren't paying attention should know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, I think you said it there, Sean, there is a stigma. And we found that on Saturday when we were at the event, you'd be talking to people about CPR, and then you'd be talking to people about naloxone, and their first initial reaction was, "Oh, I'm not sure about that." But then when you talk them through it and talk them, you know, as to why it's important and stuff like that, it does come around that, you know, people realize how important knowing what to do with somebody if they're having an overdose, and again, how easy it is to treat something if they have the locks or the training involved. So it's really, I suppose, getting around that stigma is that it's certainly from the ambulance service point of view, we treat everybody the same. You know, whether you're, you know, whether you're in need of medical care because of an intentional or accidental overdose or whatever the reason, it doesn't, whether you're having a heart attack or an overdose, it doesn't make a difference to us. We're going to treat you the same. And likewise, you know, for people who are afraid to call an ambulance because a friend of theirs or a family member of theirs is having an opioid overdose, because of that stigma, just, you know, we only are concerned about the patient, and we'll treat the patient as best of our ability as we can. We're not worried about the circumstances that led to that need of treatment. So, you know, there should be, from our point of view, we would absolutely hope that that stigma starts to decrease, because again, it'll only save lives if we get the call earlier as ambulance service. We can either instruct them to deliver naloxone if it's available to them. We can instruct them how to, you know, look after them while you're waiting for the ambulance. And the ambulance will ultimately get there quicker once we know about the call quicker.
Stephen O'Flaherty, Community Engagement Officer with the National Ambulance Service. Thanks for joining me on Let Me Explain. And thank you for listening this week. I know I learned a lot, and I'm hoping that you did as well. Sean Defoe presenting and producing this week with John Keogh, the series editor. I'll be back with you next week.